Welcome back to ASAP Nowcast. This is the May edition. My name is Cedric Dark. I'm the medical editor-in-chief of ASAP Now. May is our mental health awareness issue, and there's a couple things that I want to go over. We're going to have a few guests on the podcast today. Dr. Needy Garg, who's the director of emergency medicine research, and Dr. Heidi Levine, director of wellness in the emergency department at Northwell Health. We'll discuss the importance of system-level wellness with them, and then also we'll discuss with Stephanie Kliegler, who is a medical student and part of the wilderness medicine section for ASAP. They have a photo essay talking about the great outdoors and how that's helped people's mental health throughout the pandemic and even before that time and dealing with the stresses and trials of being an emergency physician. But one thing I want to make sure that you read in the magazine is our cover article, which talks about after 2 years of tireless advocacy that Dr. Lorna Breen bills finally signed into law. So hopefully you'll give those a read when the magazine arrives at your doorstep, and I hope you enjoy the content. Let's go ahead and jump into the conversations now. So joining me today, we have Dr. Garg, Director of Emergency Medicine Research at South Shore University Hospital, Northwell Health, and Associate Professor of Emergency Medicine at the Donald and Barbara Zucker School of Medicine at Hofstra, Northwell, New York. And Dr. Levine, who's an attending physician in emergency medicine and assistant professor at the Donald and Barbara Zucker School of Medicine at Hofstra Northwell Health in New York. Ladies, thank you very much for joining us on ASAP Nowcast.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Right, so you all wrote an article for us in the May issue of ASAP Nowcast, which is our wellness issue, our mental health issue. And you're talking about system-level wellness, largely at Northwell. And it starts out with a conversation about the Medscape burnout report from 2022, which reports that for emergency physicians, about 60% of ER doctors are feeling burnt out. And, you know, I look back over the years, we've gone from maybe, what, number three or four on the burnout scale to number one. We have successfully achieved, we've unlocked the achievement of number one at something. However, it's a dubious achievement, being that it's burnout. And I was hoping, Dr. Levine, you could tell us a little bit more about what this means for our profession.
So, you know, it's really not surprising that our level of burnout, especially in emergency medicine, has increased. We were not in good shape, as you referenced, before the pandemic. And then when you look at the stressors of the pandemic imposed upon emergency medicine, which were huge, it's really not surprising that the rates of burnout have increased.
What has Northwell been doing to address burnout? I guess, and we can divide this up into sort of a pre-pandemic time to sort of a during pandemic time, and maybe now as we're getting towards that, hopefully post-pandemic time frame.
Before the pandemic, Northwell actually was amazing as far as what they were offering. They had, you know, the regular types of things as far as employee assistance programs, physician resource networks specifically for their physicians. They had Weight Watchers and smoking cessation. They were giving financial credits for doing online health risk assessments. And they had some other types of programs, including a Center for Integrative Medicine. Once the pandemic hit, we had a Center for Traumatic Stress, Resilience, and Recovery created. And these clinicians deal specifically with building resilience skills in the moment. They're still continuing, and I work closely with them. We had online exercise programs, Tai Chi, yoga, anything. The Headspace was available free for anyone who was an employee. And as we know, mindfulness is an amazing evidence-based practice to help decrease things like stress and anxiety and help us maintain focus and be in the moment so that we can be more effective in our positions. They also changed the structure of their team, Lavender. They provided spiritual support with our chaplaincy, and you could call in and actually speak to someone if that was something that you felt you needed on your individual level. You have to remember, wellness really has so many different flavors, shall we say. For some, it might be spiritual, and some it might be physical. So they were really addressing a multitude of support.
Before you get into the post part, I just wanted to ask a question. You had mentioned Team Lavender. That's not something that I'm familiar with. Can you explain that to the listeners real quick?
Sure. So a team lavender is when an adverse outcome with a patient occurs, whether it's an adult patient or a child patient, as we see every age in the emergency department, and the team needs to do a debrief. And so we come together and we discuss really the things that we did correctly in a judgment-free type of zone. And then, if there's any emotional support that needs to be given to the team or an individual, then that person will have a one-on-one with the leader of that group.
All right, thank you, Dr. Levine, for telling us and the listeners about Team Lavender. You were about to get into talking about the post-pandemic phase and what Northwell is going to be doing to help address burnout moving forward.
So Northwell actually is continuing some of the programs that they did institute during the pandemic. And the Governor Board Physicians Wellbeing Group currently is looking at a peer counseling type of program and how to institute that. System-wide, one of the most impressive things that we are doing is actually rolling out a stress first aid program. Stress first aid is a peer-to-peer support program that addresses stress in the moment so that it doesn't have time to be subject to stoicism, that we don't push down and let it accumulate. And anyone really can do it. I'm one of the master trainers for the program, and this program is run through our Center for Traumatic Stress Resilience and Recovery. And almost everyone universally that we've taught so far really gets it. They see how easy it is to apply, and it's evidence-based way of decreasing burnout. One of the other things that I think is really amazing that they've done is they've created a mental health center for residents, because we know that medical students that are entering internship and residents especially are subject to incredible amounts of undue stress. So these are two really amazing accomplishments, and programs that they have started.
Thank you so much, Dr. Levine, about that. Dr. Garg, I want to switch a little bit to you and talk about a couple of things, because I remember early in the pandemic as well, and I think that a lot of other physicians have felt this way, either burnt out or stressed or, even bordering on things like depression even. We've all heard the story about Lorna Breen. It's in the magazine this month. I'm talking about the Lorna Breen Act that finally got passed with ACEP support. One of the things our department did was having our psychiatry department, we have emergency psychiatrists working with us constantly in the emergency department. They actually just opened up like a call line 2 times a day, 8 in the morning, 8 at night, for anyone that wanted to call in, just sort of decompress. And, I think that was a great feature that our department did. And I was wondering if you could address like how the pandemic itself impacted burnout, which was already so prevalent in our community.
That's a great question. And, I want to first start by saying that Lorna Breen's story is something we should never forget, because it's a story of a very empathetic EM physician who was directly impacted by the pandemic, and that could be anybody. So that's great that, the ACEP has done so much advocacy effort, and we are constantly working on the Lorna Breen Act, and it's finally getting towards where we are. We are still miles away from where we should be. And I think what you said about your department having a psychiatrist and opening a line and to just decompress, it's an excellent measure. Actually, I have been a big proponent of decompressing, and I call it as a pressure cooker effect. We are like pressure cookers. We take in all the, all the misery and all the grief in this world. We see the people in the worst of their state, and we collect amongst ourselves. And if we don't decompress, we are actually going to explode, and that's what it becomes into, depression and some morphological changes in our brain. Like mental health, if you track it, it actually changes the structure of your brain, and there has been more and more evidence about it. So I think that's a great endeavor, and which every emergency medicine department should institute. You know, the biggest hurdle, I want to address that first, is has always been the you know, the medicine boards, like the certification boards, licensing boards in the states, because having a mental health illness was viewed as a negative thing. And in many states, the way the laws are written, your license could be denied, you know, in the past. So and it's so variable, and the language varies, and you know, it's very different from state to state, basically. So those things we are overcoming slowly, and this is something we have to work at each level: the state level, the federal level, the regional level, the departmental level. Like, one level efforts won't work. And I 100% agree to the next part of your question, that how pandemic made it worse. It made it worse at many, many levels. So we were already in a pressure cooker format. Now we were also the vectors for our families. You know, when the virus was very, very virulent, a lot of physicians distanced themselves from their families. You know, they have young kids or caring for older parents, or somebody immunocompromised at home, or in some cases they may be on immunosuppressants themselves. So in that phase, they like, for example, people who were cancer survivors, you know, that posed big threat to the physicians themselves. And on top of that, we had the PPE challenge, right? Now, like, there were places where PPE was very scant or not available, and physicians were put in jeopardized situations. Then there were these fluctuating guidelines, like if you are sick, you can work 7 days, or you can be quarantined for 7 days, then it decreased to 5 days, then to 3 days. And then the recommendations were different for physicians versus the general public. So I think somewhere in the pandemic, it reflected big time that physicians are put at a higher level of, and are expected to have a higher level of resilience. But at the bottom, they are humans. We have relationships, we have families, and you know, like, there were we have parents, we have kids. You know, the parents and the kids were worried about the well-being of the physicians themselves. So all that compounded so much stress on the physician. So I'm absolutely not surprised that we are on number one, because we face this pandemic in our face, you know, with every wave. So I'm not even talking about the intense phase. With every wave, we don't know, like, who is positive. You know, initially when the wave starts, so people are so asymptomatic, and we are constantly exposed. And by the time the numbers come up and the strains are strained, we have been pretty exposed by that time. And all that uncertainty and ability to not go, like, move anywhere. For example, there were also travel restrictions, which were very, very strict for the physicians. So you couldn't travel outside the state, because you have this public responsibility to see a lot of people. If we are sick, we are becoming the vector for hundreds of people we are going to see in the ER. So it's multifold, and you know, the list just continues, that why, how pandemic affected us, you know, in a negative way.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that answer. One thing before we go, I just wanted to see what people could actually do to mitigate burnout, moral injury, whatever it is that we choose to call this. Are there some evidence-based strategies that either our employers or we ourselves could follow?
Absolutely. So there's a tons of evidence in the literature, you know, prior to the pandemic, during the pandemic. So it categorizes into two sorts of efforts. One is organizational efforts, and one is the individual level efforts. So organizational system level efforts, which includes, like, engagement, you know, cultivating warm culture, you know, and another example of team lavender, appreciation, recognition. Those are, and not to mention about the how to make our job efficient but less interruptive, you you know, efficient EMRs. Those are organizational level efforts which have been documented. And one thing, it's not like a magic that one thing you hit and it's going to disappear. And the other things are individual level focused efforts. For example, you know, we earlier spoke about the narrative medicine. Like essentially what your department is doing is narrative medicine and psychological counseling at the same time. So those two are very well documented in the literature. And psychological counseling without having any stigma of being labeled or a taboo around it is of paramount importance in the evidence-based world. So I would say those three broad categories of organizational level efforts, individual level efforts, and then the psychological counseling available without stigma.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you both, Dr. Garg and Dr. Levine, for joining us today with ASAP Nowcast. The emergency medicine paradigm is changing. More and more entrepreneurial emergency physicians are creating new independent and small groups with policies and practices that matter most to them. ASAP's new independent EM group masterclass, called the Indy Class for short, will teach you how to succeed in group ownership and empower you to take control of your own destiny. Learn more at asap.org/indyclass. Welcome back to ASAP Nowcast. With me now is Sophie Karwaska Kliegler. She's on a research year. She's about to be fourth year at Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York City. And we're going to talk today about a photo that she put in our Great Outdoors photo essay in our mental health awareness issue for the May issue of ASAP Now. We have this tremendous photo essay in our current issue. I don't know if you've seen it yet. Mine just got in the mail yesterday, so hopefully it's hitting mailboxes pretty soon by the time people are listening to this podcast. You have this picture of you standing in the mountains of the Peruvian Andes. Can you tell us about that photo?
Yes, so that was taken in the months before I started medical school. I was sort of done with the application process, knew I was heading to Mount Sinai, and I took a solo travel trip through South America. You know, I worked in Bolivia for a couple weeks at a wildlife sanctuary, and then I headed over to Peru via bus to do this trek up to Machu Picchu. And so that is where that picture was taken. The background of it is that, you know, my grandmother and my father's mother, who I was very close to, had sort of been sick and in pain for a while. And when I was away, she actually went into the hospital with the CHF exacerbation and basically decided that it was her time to go. So it was a strange experience of being in this unbelievably beautiful place, but also being really far away from my family at the time, and far away from someone that I really cared about. But it was also fitting because my grandmother absolutely loved travel when she was 80. She like took a trip to Antarctica. And so it was sort of a surreal experience to be there like in this really sad time, but also in this amazing environment, and knowing that I was doing something that she would have loved and would have loved to hear about. So that's sort of the overall context behind the photo that's taken.
Talk a little bit about your grandmother, just for a second. All of us obviously have grandparents. We're lucky if we get to know one or several of them, honestly. I only got to know one of my grandparents growing up and everything. But what was her influence on your life?
Yeah, she is probably the person that had the single biggest influence on my life. She was just sort of the most fierce, interesting, loving person I've met. Her parents came over from like the Ukraine, Poland, Russia area in the 20s. Before World War II, and almost her entire extended family was killed in the Holocaust. But she just sort of went on to have this amazing life. You know, she was born in Brooklyn. In college, she wrote her thesis about the familial benefits of having a working mother in the house. She traveled to Geneva by herself in 1946, just after the war. She became a dean at Albert Einstein College of Medicine and helped to develop the first early sexual harassment policies at the institution. So she was just, you know, a really impressive lady, but she was one of those people who, when you spoke to her, all she wanted to do was sort of hear about what you were doing. And I, in high school, was fortunate, you know, she lived near my high school in New York City, and I would go over there after school, and she was fascinated about what was going on in the details of my high school life. And she was just one of those people who made you feel important, and she really was listening to you at all times and really cared about what was going on. And I feel like that is a quality that I've really tried to emulate in my life because I recognize how important and special it made me feel, and I want to try to provide that feeling to other people as well.
Now, it sounds like a great thing to do, to carry on that tradition from her. And, you know, you're in this place, as you say, when I guess she was entering the hospital. And did she pass while you were there?
Yeah, she did. And it was a complicated timing. You know, she kind of entered the hospital, and then by the time it became clear that she was probably not going to leave the hospital, it was too late. And so part of me felt this sort of guilt that I wasn't there with her during this whole process. But I spoke to my dad a lot about this, and kind of the conclusion we came to is that she would have been frustrated with me if I had come back from this experience that she had had and that she had loved. And so I sort of take solace in knowing that she would have been thrilled that I was still continuing on with my adventures.
I think that's one of those things that, you know, we in emergency medicine face, and in medicine in general, right? You know, we tend to miss things like birthdays and holidays, babies being born sometimes, or, you know, loved ones dying. It's not something that we always have the opportunity to attend to. So, yeah, that could be certainly a very difficult experience. And thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, of course. And I just, you know, your relationship with someone is so much more than the specific moments. You know, you miss some here and there, but that doesn't dictate the importance that you have in their life or that they have in yours.
Well, being there at that moment in the Andes, knowing that your grandmother had been, you know, in those same footsteps where you were, at such a pivotal moment in her life and your family's life, how did that impact your mental and emotional well-being?
I feel like in some ways it was almost the best place I could have been. I mean, obviously it would have been wonderful to have my family there and to have been there during the process. But I think for myself, for my grandmother, for my dad, for a lot of our family, the wilderness, the outdoors has always been this very kind of centering, uniting force in our lives. And so I was there, I was in the mountains, it was beautiful. I was really sad, but also you don't have distractions when you're out there. And so I was able to sort of sit and process what was happening. And when I came back, my dad and I actually went on a trek out in Yosemite National Park, just the two of us. And that was just a couple of weeks after she had died. And it really allowed us to just sort of be together in our grief in this wonderful, beautiful place. So simultaneously feeling, you know, really intense sadness and reveling in the beauty of Yosemite and the Andes and all of that.
Well, that's one of the reasons why we actually wanted to roll with this photo essay, because, you know, the wilderness medicine section of ASEP really had a lot of stories similar to yours as to how they use the outdoors sort of as a hobby, but also as a place of healing. And can you tell me why, for you, is the outdoors that place?
I mean, I think, you know, we all talk a lot about how we are more connected than ever these days, social media and technology, but that we also know that a lot of that connection is superficial. And for me, being outside, primarily backpacking, but really any form of being outside, has always just been a way to like really be more present in myself and in my relationships with the world, you know, because in some ways all you're doing is walking and eating and sleeping and looking at what's around you. You don't have like the normal things that you have in your day-to-day life that are distracting you and also allowing you to distract yourself from some of the things that you might need to process. And so when you're outside, oftentimes you're not forced, but you are required to face the things that are going on inside you that you maybe that are hard to face, which is challenging, but is critical.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And, you know, we don't have a long time for the interview, so thank you for the time that you've been able to devote for us in this episode. One last thing. You're approaching your fourth year of med school, so you're probably going to be doing some elective rotations, I'm assuming, and thinking about where you're going to match. Are there any places that you're trying to go to? If you want to come hang out with us at Baylor College of Medicine, feel free to do so. Open advertisement for anybody that wants to rotate at Baylor, by the way.
Wow, how generous. I'm currently in the process of figuring out away rotations. You know, I grew up on the East Coast. My family's all here. So I think that's probably the target. But I also, you know, as we've just spoken about, I love to explore new areas. I find that very exciting. So maybe Baylor will be on the list.
It sounds like you're probably going to be asking people, you know, which of your residents have been to, you know, random countries as part of their clinical rotations. That might be a good question to ask program directors.
That helps. The more people who like backpacking.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, thank you very much, Sophie, for your time, and have a great day.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you all for joining us, for listening to ASAP Nowcast for May. Just a little teaser for the June issue. Do you remember the TV show Emergency? It was a series that transformed pre-hospital care. It's turning 50. The show debuted in 1972. Pre-hospital care has become exponentially more effective at saving lives, in part due to the influence from that TV series. So look forward to your magazine next month and on this podcast, where we're going to interview some people that were behind the scenes of the TV show. And this is going to be my last episode. Next month, expect a new host, Dr. Amy Faith Ho. She'll be taking us deeper into the stories behind emergency medicine on ASAP Nowcast. Thank you.
ASAP Now is published by Wiley and is a product of the American College of Emergency Physicians. The views expressed on ASAP Nowcast are those of the hosts and any guests. The music is Florence Price's Fantasy No. 1 in G minor for violin and piano.